Hi, I'm Bill Crow, sitting in for Marion McPartland. 20 years ago on Piano Jazz, we reconvened Marion's Hickory House Trio from the 1950s. I was her bass player, and Joe Morello was her drummer. Our trio was pretty hot. It was named Small Group of the Year in 1955 by Metronome Magazine. To mark the 20th anniversary of our reunion, which was recorded for Piano Jazz in 1990, Marion has asked me to share some memories from that very special time. I couldn't be more delighted. In the 1940s, New York's 52nd Street was a jazz mecca, and the Hickory House was one of the many clubs there. By 1952, when Marion opened there with her trio, many of the other jazz clubs on the street had closed, but she managed to hold court at the Hickory House for 12 years. I had the privilege of playing with Marion and Joe Morello for a wonderful couple of years of that run. She went on to become an established club pianist with other bassists and drummers, and also a solo performer. And, of course, she became the beloved host of Piano Jazz. Today, I'll be sharing some stories about the trio, along with some outtakes from the recording that we did for the 1990 broadcast, Things Not Heard Before. So, why don't we start from the beginning?
You know, I haven't seen you for an age. And, of course, after we worked at the Hickory House, which was in the 50s, God.
We were the last jazz on 52nd Street after Ryan's moved.
I think so.
Yeah.
But, of course, you and Joe both went on to such great things in various groups and with various people. Didn't you go right off to the Hickory House and join Jerry Mulligan? Wasn't that what you did?
Yes, that was when he had an opening in his sextet, and the lure of his arranging and Bob Brookmeyer on trombone was irresistible.
Boy, that was some lure, I would say. And I heard the group many times. And it was wonderful. Joe, of course, we know where you went. You went with Dave Brubeck.
No, after I left your group, that Tommy Dorsey thing was coming up, and then a Benny Goodman thing, and then I did go with Dave, yeah.
Well, now, how long did that last? I forget. It seemed like it went on forever.
12 and a half years.
My goodness, you can't keep a steady job.
That's always been my problem.
You know, we could go on forever talking about the Hickory House and the different things we did, but I think we probably should play something, shouldn't we?
Well, we've got the instruments here. We might as well.
We might as well. Joe, what about the tune you wanted to do? I'm beginning to see the light.
Sure.
You count it off, or you start it.
Okay.
Okay?
You all set?
Yep.
Here we go.
The restaurant became the meeting ground for many musicians. There were still enough other jazz clubs in the neighborhood, Birdland, Basin Street West, Snookies, to keep a lot of visiting musicians in our audiences, and Marion often invited them to sit in, from Oscar Peterson and Thelonious Monk to Billy Strayhorn and Duke himself, although it took Marion a year of coaxing to get Duke up on the bandstand to play with Joe and me. Duke always said goodbye to his audiences with the phrase, "And we love you madly." He turned that line into a song, which Marion and Joe and I always enjoyed playing. Thank you.
You know, musicians are often practical jokers, and we were no exception. We played tricks on each other and on John Mahigan, the solo pianist who worked opposite us at the Hickory House. And somewhere along the way, I bought a little rubber figurine of Mickey Mouse's dog Pluto, which had bendable legs. I wrapped it around the stick that held up the lid of Marion's piano so it was looking at her while she played. She said nothing, but after the next break, I found Pluto attached to a couple of my bass strings. We continued alternately repositioning the dog without comment for several months. And one of Joe's favorite jokes was his ratchet.
Joe, did you bring the ratchet?
No, I couldn't find one. It's somewhere buried in the...
When I think of what you used to do, when I would get up onto the bandstand up those three steps, mm-hmm. you would turn the ratchet and...
Make it sound like her knees were very so old.
Yeah, like my knees were gone.
I'd be like, you know.
Well, it was funny, when we first came to work there, the only light on the bandstand was a little soft floodlight that they had over the piano shining down on Marion's head. And we were in the middle of a huge oval bar with piles of whiskey bottles on both ends and the bartenders running around at our feet. And Marion would complain that there was more light out in the room than there was on the bandstand. It was very hard for us to attract the attention of the audience sometimes. So we finally got John Popkin, the owner, to turn the brightest lights off as soon as the dinner hour was over and the music began. But it was still very bright in there. So one night when he was away, Marion gave me enough money to go buy some lights, and I built a little switch system.
Oh, that was wonderful. And, that was a wonderful improvement.
Yeah, and I had it worked out so that I could catch the switches with my foot.
That's
and
right.
So when we did fours, the light would, in time, switch from Joe to me or Marion to Joe or whatever. But one night I crept around and turned out all the lights in the room except the wall sconces and the fireplace in back was had a big fire where the hickory steaks were cooked. And it had the effect of lowering this huge ceiling. It must have been a 40-foot ceiling in that club, and made it look very intimate, and the focal point was the bandstand. It was very nice. It looked like a nightclub for a change.
It's funny, I remember that, and how disappointed I was when Mr. Popkin came back and turned all the lights on.
Yes,
again.
He came running in and said, "Who put out the lights? People will think we're closed."
In fact, he had this huge cabinet with steaks and pieces of meat in it. And
it was lit better than we were.
It was. In fact, I said to him rather vulgarly, "Why don't you turn that light out and put some lights on the other meat?" And he wasn't too amused. Well, let's have a go at another tune.
Great.
Well, Bill, something you showed me. I used to play this tune called I Hear Music, and you had this nice little, I don't know what you call it, putting the tune in another place, that the tune goes... and you had it go...
Did I do that?
You did that. No, you did that. It was nice, because then the melody is on the bottom.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was sort of hip.
Shall we do it?
Yeah, let's do it.
While we were at the Hickory House, Joe Morello was discovered by the New York jazz writers and interviewers, and they kept comparing him to drummers like Buddy Rich, Gene Krupa, and Louis Belson. Joe was uncomfortable with these comparisons, and in defense, he invented a fictitious drummer named Marvin Bonessa, who he claimed could outplay all of them.
All these drummers would come in, and Joe would be telling them about Marvin Vanessa. Were you there then?
I remember. I think you had done that before I joined, but I helped perpetuate the myth.
Well, you know, we actually perpetuated that thing to such an extent that we had Marvin Vanessa's name in the downbeat
and in Playboy
drum
also?
Poll.
Yeah, he got a couple of votes. And,
yeah.
Oh, several. I think I sent in about 10.
You want to know what's funny about this? When I was at the quartet with Brubeck, and Charlie Bourgeois was, you know, we went on these George Wein team tours all the time in Europe and everything. So I told Brubeck about this Bonessa thing. And so I was sitting on a plane with Charlie, and I said, well, this Marvin Bonessa. I said, he's a great, you know, I went through my whole thing. And he said, well, where is he? Where can we find him? I said, somewhere in the Midwest. I said, he's kind of a strange guy. And he actually wanted him. I said, well, the guy is really weird. He just doesn't believe in recorded music. I said, he walks in and could wipe anybody out. And I wanted, you know, the whole routine we had.
Well, eventually, Joe was poached from Marion by Dave Brubeck, and she still kids Dave about stealing her drummer, although she was a good sport about it all. Marion asked Joe Morello's colleague, Paul Desmond, from the Dave Brubeck Quartet, about his reputation for dating beautiful fashion models. Paul said, oh, they'll go out for a while with a cat who's scuffling, but they always seem to end up marrying some manufacturer from the Bronx. This is the way the world ends, not with a whim, but a banker. And that leads us back to the Hickory House Trio, playing a lovely song that Paul Desmond often played, Emily by Johnny Mandel.
To hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast, tune in next week to your NPR station. Log on to pianojazz.npr.org to find a station in your area. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. Support for Piano Jazz comes from Save America's Treasures, a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Parks Service, Department of the Interior, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR.